Blog Talk Radio.
What the heck is an aperture? And what's the difference between a 14-megapixel camera and one with only 5 megapixels? And we're having an upcoming wedding in my family, and how should we select the right photographer for the right price? And what are some of the hot tips for taking the best pictures throughout the holiday season? We'll answer these and other questions with our veteran guest speaker today and photographer Sandy Middlebrooks on today's show. I am Carol Copeland Thomas, and welcome to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and I'm glad that you joined us today. It's pretty brisk. We're in the 20s here in the Boston area, but we're holding tight. There's no snow on the ground. That's a good thing, but it looks like we're going to have a pretty long winter, but at least it's sunshining, so I'm excited. I hope that you, wherever you are, you're safe. I know that in the upstate New York area, in the Buffalo area, they are getting clobbered with snow, and there's a lot of cold weather in the deep south, in Atlanta, and parts of Florida and other parts of the South. So I hope that you've bundled up wherever you happen to be, if you're on the West Coast or in certainly in the Midwest or the South, or if you are out of the United States. I hope that you are warm, safe, and happy during this holiday season. A special shout out to my Hanukkah friends, my Jewish friends, who are celebrating the last day of Hanukkah. It's an 8-day festival of lights from sunup December the 1st until sunset. At least sunset, let me get this right, sunset December 1st until sunset December 9th. So this is the last day, the last official day for Hanukkah, and we wish all of our Jewish listeners and friends the very best during this last portion of Hanukkah. It's such a wonderful time of the year because of the convergence of so many holidays, and we know that Christmas is right around the corner, along with Kwanzaa. So whatever you happen to celebrate, including winter solstice, we hope that you will have a wonderful and meaningful holiday season. We know that this is really the season of sadness, too. We just heard about the death of Elizabeth Edwards, just a courageous woman who had gone through so much, losing her son, her own health being compromised, fighting off breast cancer for such a long time, the difficulties with her marriage as well. She wrote 2 books in spite of all that, and now, unfortunately, she's passed on. So for some people, this is a difficult time of year with the seasons changing, with the reflections of loss of those people who are going through difficulties. Certainly my friends who are listening on the air who, unfortunately, are looking for work and are having difficulties looking for work, we hope that you will hang tough, hang in there, and move through this, and ultimately find an opportunity that is right for you. And speaking of that, we are very excited, speaking of new opportunities, to announce a brand new publication that my organization is putting out called Connections, Expanding Horizons in a Multicultural World. This new magazine will come out in the spring. About 10,000 to 15,000 copies will be distributed across Massachusetts, New England, and the United States, and it's all focused on the impact and the activities that are going on with people who are focused on multicultural issues. No matter what the race, the ethnicity, where they happen to live, we're going to focus on multiculturalism in a positive way with a positive perspective. So I'm very excited about it. We have already launched our advertising campaign and would love for you to consider an ad. If you are a large corporation or an individual, a small business, we have a rate structure for you. Special pricing ends on December 21st. So if you want to have more information about Connections, please give me a call at 508-947-5755 or shoot me an email at tellcarol@mac.com. That's T-E-L-L CAROLE, at mac.com, and we will email you an ad packet based on the size of your organization. I'm just excited about this. It's going to be a four-color publication, and it's going to be chock full of terrific information that will really be applicable whether you're on the job or off the job, all talking about multicultural issues. So be prepared and just get ready for an exciting new publication. It is the holiday season, and many of you are taking pictures. We have brought on, again, a veteran expert. When we had him on the show before, he garnered a lot of attention. We had a lot of downloads, and I'm excited to bring back to the airwaves Sandy Middlebrooks, who I've known forever. Hello, Sandy. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Carol?
I'm doing fine, doing just fine. Now, I know that tomorrow you are going to be getting ready for a big event here in the Boston area called the Ebony Gala, and it is a consortium or a collaboration of several organizations, your fraternity, Omega Psi Phi, my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, several other organizations coming together and having a good time. So what are you going to do with your camera during the Ebony Gala event tomorrow?
Well, the gala, you know, is an event, as you know, that's been going on for a number of years, and one of the things I try to do is just kind of just actually roam around and just record the people that are coming to the event, you know, and I've been doing it, I think, for at least the last 10 years, I think, the event, I think it's been going on for about 23, and, you know, just basically just try to record who's there and what's going on and that type of thing. They also generally have another photographer there who is doing, like, formal photography. He's generally set up and has a little background and everything, and he's doing formal pictures, which he's actually selling right there on the spot, which is very popular and everything.
Right.
My job is more one of just kind of roaming around, just trying to record what's going on.
So you're going to be like a paparazzi almost.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm paparazzi, you know, which is actually what I kind of prefer at this point. You're just kind of moving around, just kind of doing my own thing. I really enjoy that.
Really? Now, tell me, what will you look for? And again, we're talking, we're going to get more into your background in a few minutes, and I thank my friends and colleagues who are in the chat room. We have questions we have ready to ask you, so we'll definitely get to them in just a few minutes. But in your capacity, you've been doing this almost your whole life. We're going to go back to your history, too. But, I mean, decades of just experience. When you're at a big function like that with a couple of thousand people, what do you look for and how do you frame your shots and what motivates you to take pictures of certain people?
Well, I tell you, what I'm actually looking for always in my photography relationship, I actually call my photography relationship photography. That's the way I look at it. I think people really want photographs around relationships, and we have all kinds of different relationships. We have the very obvious one, which is like family. Then we have friends. Then we have social relationships. Sometimes they're around fraternal organizations. They're around churches. And people tend to gather around these types of groups, even when they're out in public.
Uh-huh.
So if you identify these groups and get those groups of people together, then they identify with those kinds of photographs, you know, because these are the people they know, these are the people that they socialize with, they live with, that are important to them. So what I'm always looking at is relationships, and I can see them. I mean, when I see people roaming around, I can tell because people tend to group themselves together this way, you know.
Right, right.
So and I'm also looking for a location to take these photos. Well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So you're looking, when you talk about relationships, and clearly you have relationships that go back decades, like me and a lot of your other customers, are you looking to form new relationships, or are you looking for a new particular picture with people you're familiar with?
Well, what I'm looking for, what I'm generally looking for, is relationships that I'm aware of already, or ones that I can identify, because what I'm always looking for is adding more photographs to my archive of photographs this week, which we'll probably talk about, that I've accrued
right
over the years. But you know, these relationships that I see, and immediately when I walk into any event, I immediately see these relationships. I see them going on. And sometimes I actually will work to get these relationships together. If I realize that these group of people represents a certain church organization, or if they represent a certain sorority or that type of thing, I'll just coach these people to get together in a particular spot, try to move them away from the crowd, and try to pull them together and just get a photo of them, because I know to them this is very, very important, that they're all there together. But they may not think to do that because they're there, they're having a good time, and it's not on their mind that, gee, we got 10 of our sorrows here, let's kind of get together and take a shot. You know, they don't think like that at the time, you know.
Yeah, that's what I admire about you, because you seize the moment and you know that each moment is a point in time and a bit of history that is not going to be repeated. You talked about that on the last show.
Yes, I mean, I can't. That's the total motivation of everything that I do. Really, it's interesting. I have a little cartoon up on my wall that I cut out of the paper a number of years ago, and I feel like it kind of really made very clear to me the way I thought it. I'll try to describe it to you, but it's a cartoon from the a cartoon series called The Family Circus. I don't know if you ever watch it. It's in the
Family
paper. And it shows a photographer, and he's taking a picture of a group of kids, and they're in, like, let's say the second grade. And they're all moving around. They don't want to stand there and take the picture. And you see the two particular kids, they're highlighting. They see them complaining, why are we doing this? It makes no sense. I don't want to do this. And the photographer's trying to get them to stand there. And then they show the next little segment, cartoon thing. They show the same children. Now they're 50 years old. And they're looking at the same photograph now. This is 50 years later. And they're looking and say, wow, I'm glad we took this picture. It's a good thing I wanted to do this. And they're, and they're all excited about looking at this picture.
Priceless.
They're still standing there, right? Yeah. Not looking
that
back and realizing
that
they had no desire to do this at all, you know.
It's a snapshot in time. Just a snapshot in time.
Exactly.
So, so important. Wow. I want to ask, we have Dr. Rhonda Waters in our chat room. Hello, shout out to Dr. Rhonda. And she just started her own radio program yesterday from 12 to 12:30. Was so glad to listen in. That's going to take place every Wednesday, so big shout out to her. She has a question. She says, any camera recommendations for a 12-year-old?
Oh, yes, I can give out a couple of... Let me say, first of all, let me just say hello to Rhonda. Rhonda's one of the ones that I've taken photos of over the years, you know? I have photos of Rhonda. She probably doesn't realize I have of her at least... I did portraits of her at least, let's say, 15 or 20 years ago, you know?
Right.
And I remember them to this day. You know, one of the things about every photo... I remember every photograph of everybody I've ever taken. but 12-year-old, it's really interesting. Now, the way the cameras are now, the technology and stuff, the 12-year-old, you probably can get almost any camera for a 12-year-old because they'll probably understand it better than we will, you know, because they're really up on the technology. You know, they're up
right.
on the computer. They understand the Wii system and all this kind of stuff, and they have the, you know, the PlayStations and everything else. And basically, cameras now are mini computers. So if you're up on that type of technology, and they can easily pick it up. Now, as far as a specific camera, I wouldn't recommend a specific camera for anyone because the technology of stuff is such that cameras are constantly changing and evolving. And something I would say today may not even be true tomorrow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What I would recommend that you go up to one of the websites, and one I have a particular that I go to often, it's called DP Review. And it's dpreview.com. And there they have all of the cameras that people are purchasing, and they have discussion groups there discussing each and every camera. And you can really go up, and I'm not one to write comments, but if you want to ask questions, you can actually ask a specific question, and people will come up and comment about specific cameras and the experiences they've had with them. And you can kind of go through that and kind of figure out what camera things appeal for you. And then after that, of course, you can go and try to find out where you can get that camera for the most reasonable price, possibly, if that's a concern or that type of thing. But that's a good location to go up just to get information on specific cameras. I tend to use Canon cameras, but that's not to say that they're the only cameras out there, the only brand that works, because all these cameras, I think, are pretty much, once you get them, you can do pretty much anything with them as long as you know what you're doing.
Right. And also, I'm actually writing this in our chat room for those who are listening in. And so DP Review is one website that Sandy has recommended where you can go and specifically check out some of the brand cameras and do your own review process. I also said Google Darren Rouse because Darren Rouse is a photographer, just a man with lots of talent in Australia, and he has a very popular site that you can go to and also do the same thing, find out specific information about specific cameras. So I want to just sort of go back and ask a couple of questions that I had teed up earlier and sort of teased up earlier. Sandy, I wanted to know, what is aperture? What is that?
Well, aperture really, I think, I guess it's just really the size of the opening that you have at the photo when you're taking a photo. You know, it kind of concerns the amount of light that's going to come in on a photo. But again, with modern-day cameras, unless you're really going to get into photography now to the point that you're going to be shooting manually on cameras, it's not near as important as it was in the past. In the past, when you were using analog cameras, and aperture, shutter speed, and all these types of things were very, very important. Right? But now these cameras are so automatic, and they're so smart that really, if the camera is set, you set it for a certain size file. You set it for either maybe automatic, and the automatic setting generally gives you the choice of setting the automatic set based upon speed or automatic based upon the aperture, which really says which way you want to go. If you want if speed is a concern or if the aperture is a concern. But then the big variable with these newer cameras is you can also set it upon the speed that you have the ISO set, which is really in the past would have been the film speed, like you buy 400 feet.
So back up a little bit. ISO, explain what ISO is, because I know we have people who are going to be listening. They're going to say, ISO, what's that? What is ISO standing in the book?
That's an international standard that's set for the sensitivity of the film in the past, but now it's actually the sensitivity, if you will, of the file that's set in the camera. But with digital cameras, you can set this. So you can literally set the camera to be ISO 400 or ISO 600 or ISO 800 or ISO 1600. And with these new cameras that come out, some of them go up to, like, I think up to 1600, 6400, that type of thing, which means that you can virtually take a camera in a room where there's a minimal amount of light, because the higher the ISO, the minimal amount of light you need in order to take a pretty good photograph. So that's what ISO is. So it's something that's very...
And if you go to a higher ISO speed, you can go into a dark room and take a picture. Is the picture going to come out grainier? Do you get is your picture compromised if you have a higher ISO speed?
Well, obviously it is to a certain extent. But again, as I said, the technology is improving such that I hesitate to say that, because depending upon the quality of the camera that you purchase, you may not lose that much quality based upon that, because again, that's a professional camera, at least the types of cameras I'm using which you pay quite a bit for. These cameras, you know, the quality you get from using highest ISO may be equal to the quality you get from another camera at a lower ISO, because you pay for that kind of ability to do that. You know, they built that into the camera, to the technology. So high ISO does not necessarily mean that you're going to be getting a poor quality picture now. You know, at some point it does get to the point you lose. But they keep improving this. You know, everything with this digital thing, every day is a new day, you know.
You know, it's amazing. I'm thinking about how we're all talking about we're in a paperless society, and we buy equipment. But, you know, buying equipment now, you don't buy equipment forever. You buy equipment for like 18 months before it's either out of date or something goes wrong with it, or certainly with computers, and the same thing with cell phones that now have camera capabilities and video capabilities. I mean, the longevity of equipment is astounding. You have to replace things so much quicker. Are you finding that also, Sandy?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because I think that's true. And it's something that, you know, if you're from a consumer standpoint, you have to be very careful of, particularly with cameras, because often I feel like you're purchasing things that you don't need. Most of the cameras that are built into them, they have all types of capabilities, features or whatever, built into the cameras that you may or may not be important to what you're going to do. I mean, if you're going to be taking pictures of your kids and they're outside and you have small kids and you want to run around, you don't need a camera that does so-and-so, and you don't need a camera that takes ISO 6400, because you're most likely going to be taking them outside in good sun, a fairly good sun, inside, fairly good lighting, you know. So it's not a real concern, you know. Yet you might say, oh, yeah, I need this high ISO and I need this huge file. That's the other thing that I noticed. Some of the people always think, what size file do you need? Well, if you're going to be taking pictures in your basic function, you're going to be putting them up on Facebook. You know, you don't need this huge file. Now, I'm making photographs that are 24 by 36 and 40 by 30. And
very large pictures.
Yes, so you need a fairly large file to get a pretty good photograph in that. But if you don't, you know, then you don't need a huge file. But yet, the camera company is obviously going to try to sell you something, because this is one of the ways that they sell you another camera. It's like having a Ferrari and living, you know, in the city, you know. you can only go so fast, you know. so it's kind of like, what's the point, you know? So you have to figure out, well, do I really need this? If you want it, obviously, it's up to you, but, you know, it may or may not be what you need, you know. So
I think that's such great points. And I wanted to I have so many questions to ask you. One of them is, you know, what is the difference? I'm looking at my Canon camera right now that has 6 megapixels. I've had it for maybe 4 or 5 years. It's a PowerShot S3. It still takes really good pictures. But then I've seen newer cameras, in particular a Nikon that costs like $200. It takes It's a 14-megapixel camera. The pictures were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. What's the association now between megapixels and price, Sandy Middlebrooks?
Well, I don't know the specific, you know, relationship between that particular camera and price and that type of thing. But, again, going back to what is happening is that if the technology improves, the number of megapixels you can get for something you may have paid for last year, you probably get more megapixels for the same cost now because technology also it comes down. You know what I mean? It starts out being very high, but now it's more reasonable. So, I mean, the cameras that we're paying now a couple of $100 for, when the first digital camera came out, professional digital camera, I know one photographer bought it, cost him $25,000, right?
Wow.
I think it was four megapixels, right? You know, so then it shows you now you can buy a consumer camera for $200, right? That has 14 megapixels. You know, so
wow.
This was like years ago, something like that, you know. So,
right.
So things have dropped in the number of megapixels. But the megapixels really, again, going back to what I said, what does determine to a certain extent the quality of the photograph that you're gonna get to a certain extent. You know? But there's a point at which it really doesn't make that much sense unless you're going to be printing all your photos. I mean, the truth of the matter is that most people are not printing the photos they're taking. You know, most of the photos are being passed back and forth on the computer. You're emailing
the
photos.
That's true. Yep.
The people
are
just looking at them on the screen. The screen resolution is about 150 dpi, which is different than a photo, which is 300 dpi. So if you're not going to be printing this thing, then it may not be necessary to have that amount of megapixels. In fact, the computer may not even be able to pass it through the, you know, through the internet thing. That's why they keep improving the speed of the internet, and they keep telling you the files that they will take the size because of all these bigger files that people are passing around, you know. But if you stuff like I said, are going to be using it on your computer, are going to be storing it like that, it's really not necessary, and that's just going to take up more storage space. So it's going to cost you more money, in a sense, to store these files, which are much larger than the little smaller files that you had that you were taking in the past. And you won't necessarily have a terrible higher quality picture either.
Right. And what about, you know, I put a little teaser out there about a money shot. Now, we're talking about a photographic money shot. For those of you who are thinking other areas, we're not even going there. We're talking about photography, a really good shot. Can you give some tips or suggestion as we're looking at the holiday season about how a person can capture that, quote, money shot with a family or some of the engagements that they're going to?
Well, first of all, I think as I kind of said the last time we spoke, first thing is that if you're an event where there's a professional photographer there, first of all, don't follow the professional photographer at all. Don't try to get the same photo that the professional photographer is getting. I think most people who have cameras, they will run around behind a professional photographer, and if he takes the shot at a wedding or at an event, I'll get that shot too. Let me get that too. Everybody stay here. I'm going to get that same shot. Well, if they hired a professional photographer to do it, just let him do that. Now, where the money shot is that you probably understand relationships that are going on that this person cannot possibly understand because they're outside of the family group, and you're most likely a part of that group. So you probably know that this is granddad in the corner and this is grandma that they haven't seen for years, and this one came from California. This other person doesn't know that, you know. So you can literally put those people together and set up a shot that will be more meaningful. And this other person who's setting up the shot that's very obvious. I mean, the shot that I'm setting up for the family would be very obvious. I mean, we'll get the mom and dad and the kid together. Well, it's kind of obvious, you know. But I don't realize that this is, you know, the uncle sitting over in the corner is her favorite brother, you know what I mean? That needs to be a part of this. You know? So you could pull that in, set that shot up, and get that shot with your family, which would probably be more cherished by the family. And that would be, if you will, your money shot. That would be the shot. Everybody will be very happy that you got and that you, again, you can send it to them on the internet, make it into a holiday card and send it to them as a gift or anything else. They'll be just very, very happy with that.
Well, you know, it's similar to your example before with that family circus comic strip that you have that you saved for so long where the kids are just sort of gathered there. They don't really want to take the picture, but then years later it means so much to them.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you're talking
about
in terms of relationships.
Exactly. That's exactly. And to me, that's at the basis of people photography, at least. I mean, there's all kinds of photography. I have a friend who was in town recently from North Carolina who's a fabulous photographer. And he's a nature photographer. So we went up to New Hampshire. We went up there in foliage and everything. And he took this beautiful shot there on his website. They're gorgeous. You know what I mean? These shots are nature, you know. And this is a whole different style of photography, and it's a style of photography where the megapixels and everything become very, very important because his shots are very large, they're very detailed, you want to be able to see the foliage, you want to be able to see the lines and the rocks and that type of thing, you know, and it really important. You don't want to go up there with your iPhone, you know? this is a waste of a trip, you know? So it's kind of a different thing, but it's just a whole different kind of photography. But when you're talking about doing with people, then again, in my mind at least, you're talking about relationships. And that's at the heart of it.
So true. And speaking of that, you know, we have upcoming weddings. There are lots of important events that are going to take place, graduations. Give us some suggestions and some tips about how our listeners, because we have listeners literally all over the country and outside of the country, what should they consider when they are selecting a professional photographer like you, Sandy Middlebrooks?
Well, again, because I feel like this kind of photography is about relationships, I always start with you talk to your friends. If they have had any type of an event that's happened in their lives and they chose a photographer, then you want to talk to them and ask them about their experience with that particular photographer, because you're probably going to be working with this person for a little while. I mean, I just recently did photography for at least 3 retirement parties here in the Boston area, and all these people were prominent people in the area here, and they just retired, and they chose me. Well, I've been working with these people for a number of years, you know, and I know their friends and I know the people who are there, and so they're very comfortable with the idea of doing this with me. You know, they can choose anyone to do this, you know, and there are a number of photographers they have to choose. And I think it's basically because of the relationship that I have with them. You know, when you come, you kind of become a part of the family. They know you, people feel comfortable with you there. They don't think you're bothering them when you come take a shot. You're not intruding. If you have to stop eating for a minute so you can take a shot, they understand their poison cover and everything else. And they give you that kind of respect. Now, if you don't have that kind of person there, then they may or may not want to do that. I've seen other people when they go and do this, that people don't respond the same way. They'll ask them to do something. People say, well, we don't want to do that right now. You know what I mean? Well, we'll come back later, this kind of thing. And so it doesn't happen. I mean, this shot that was very important. It's much more important than this turkey dinner you're about to eat, even though it doesn't seem that when you want the turkey dinner. You know, later on, it's very important, you know. And they'll say, okay, yeah, we need to do this right now. Everybody's here, Bob has to go. You know, I got to think about doing it right now. You know, but that's the type of thing I think that you begin to understand from the standpoint of doing those kinds of things that it's important to getting that together. So I guess if I don't know if I asked you a question there, but it's really just kind of being able to get those people together and finding someone who could do that at your particular type of event that you could have a good relationship with. Now, if you're in a position where you don't have that kind of situation, you don't have anybody who knows anybody, that type of thing, then the next place I would go is to the professional organizations in the area. Most organizations are professional photography associations. I happen to be a member of the ones here in this area. There's a professional photography association of Massachusetts. There's a professional photography association of New England. And there's also a professional photography association of America. Now, all of these have a listing of the photographers in the different areas. And you can go to these associations, and you get names of photographers in the area. And you can just call them, obviously, and that type of thing. Now, generally now people send out emails. Now, I'm not a strong email person because, again, to me that's a very impersonal way of dealing with someone, you know, and send an email.
Because you're about relationships, that's why.
Calling them and talking to them and seeing what they say. The way I tend to want to get. You call and you talk to them and see if it sounds like somebody that you want to get together with. You just talk to them. Having this event, they sound like your event sounds important to them. Maybe it's not. You know what I mean? They say, well, yours is one of the last 20 weddings I'm going to do, and I'm not that concerned. Well, maybe you don't want them to do your wedding, you know? I mean, sound like, well, gee, yeah, where's it going to be? You know, who's going to be there? How many people are going to have? Oh, wow. You know, you're gonna have, are your parents coming from out of town? I mean, if they're excited about it, then they're going
to want to work with someone like that. Yeah.
You want somebody who's excited about your event like you're excited about your event, you know.
Right. And for those who are listening, I actually put this in the chat room. If you want to call Sandy Middlebrooks, definitely give him a call at 617-265-8182. That's 617-265-8182, and he will be more than happy to talk to you about your upcoming event, or you can go to his website at middlebrooksphotography.com, middlebrooksphotography.com. So what you're saying, Sandy, is it's important to, I guess, get a feel for that photographer, because that photographer is going to have to feel the event. Is that not true?
Exactly. I think that, again, this is my take on it. At most events, when you're working with the person, you will probably see that photographer more after the event than you did at the event itself. So someone that you need to want to work with and finish this project up, because it's a project, you know, it doesn't just happen. Some people think that, well, we took this to my wedding and that's it, I'm all finished. Well, you know, now you got to come over, you got to look at the photos and do something, you got to go through the photos, you got to make some decisions, you got to do the album. You might have to go back and forth 3 or 4 times to finish this up. But some people never finish this up. Some people call that process for them as one.
Right.
It never became
possible. I would look at it really as a process. Yeah, I mean, I would look at it where you've got introductory stages. You, the photographer, are going to ask certain questions so that you can get a feel for, you know, how large is this wedding or how large is this event. Then the event takes place itself, and then you and in your case, people would come to your studio and then begin the selection process.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And then that's where, like I said, if you've made a good choice, all of this process is one that is seamlessly and you're happy to kind of do it because it's all kind of a pleasure. You know, the person that's interested in finishing up the project for you, they want to do the best possible job for you because they realize that not only does this represent you, but it also represents them, you know. So they're all about trying to do a good job for you. And that's the kind of person you want to try to get to be a part of your event if you can, you know. So it just takes a little time and effort. See, a lot of people don't want to put the time and effort into it. They just kind of want to hire somebody and not worry about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't quite work like that if the event is truly important to you.
We know that, you know, we're living in the age, you know, things are quite expensive for a lot of people. We talked about many people who are looking for work at the beginning of the show. How important is price when you are selecting a professional photographer, Sandy?
Well, obviously, price is always important. I mean, it's not important to you, but it's important to photographer if he's trying to maintain a business, you know. So there's always going to be a point at which price is something that's the determining factor as to whether or not you can utilize this person's services. Maybe they're beyond the price that you're willing to pay. They might be a great person. You might, all the things I said might work out quite well, and you might say, well,
mm-hmm.
they're out of my price range in terms of what I'm
mm-hmm.
willing to pay. You know what I mean? So you might not be able to pay for that. But you're generally, one of the things about photography is that there are always people field, you know, always trying to become a part of the field. So there are always people in the field that are not probably charging the huge price because they too are
right.
trying to grow their business and everything, you know. And often
right.
these people are great photographers, you know. They may not have quite the experience of someone who's done this for the last 10 years, but then they might be just as good a photographer, you know. So the thing there is that you want to look out for those people too who are kind of up and coming, you know. They're the next great Red Sox player. Maybe they haven't quite got there yet. Or the next great Celtic, or the next great, you know, Patriot player. I'm talking about his Boston team here.
Right.
But they haven't quite got there. It's finding that person, bringing them.
So they're emerging. They're like emerging photographers. They're building
exactly.
their business. Yep. They haven't been in business as long as you have. Mm-hmm.
Right. They're probably just as good a photographer. They're probably just as nice a person. They may not have some of the experience in terms of knowing exactly what's needed at the particular event, possibly because maybe
mm-hmm.
they may not have had experience at the event. So you might have to work with them a little bit more for the thing to work out. Whereas this other person is very experienced. You probably just need to just lead them to the event and just get out their way, you know.
Right.
But this other person, you might have to try to, well, make sure you get this or kind of make sure you get that, and then kind of let them do their thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. So it probably depends on the size of your event, the length of the event as well, and, you know, how skilled that particular professional is.
Exactly. All those things. I mean, it's something that's really, I mean, anytime you're hiring a service, obviously there's no real set fees that are set in stone. You know, I mean, this is a service. I mean, you know, what the person charged for the service is based upon what they feel the service is worth and what you feel the service is worth and kind of a meeting of the mind there, you know, as to what it's going to be charged, you know, and what they feel like their time is worth and if they choose to be involved. And maybe want to be involved, maybe it's so important that they'll be involved for next to nothing because they feel like the event is so important, you know. So, you know, you have to, all those kinds of things come into play, you know.
Right. And approximately how many weddings have you taken in the course of your business?
Well, I would give an estimate. It's someplace between, I think, 800 and 1,000 weddings, I think, something like that, you know.
Wow.
You know, which sounds like a lot, but it's very interesting. If you talk to some photographers, they did quite a bit more than that. I'm astounded sometimes. You know, that's been over a number of years. I mean, keep that in mind.
Sure.
I'm not glad, you know, it's over a number of years. So we're talking about, you know, 10, 15, 20 weddings some years, that type of thing, you know. But then
right,
the other people
right.
you talk to, they said they did, you know, 30, 40 weddings last year. You know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So obviously, if they stayed this for a long period of time, the number of weddings we're talking about is far, far greater than the number I'm talking about, you know.
Yeah.
You did a
superb job when my daughter married 4 years ago. The pictures are beautiful. She has enjoyed them. I know that she has a beautiful album that we bring out periodically, and you were the photographer. It was just stunning work, really stunning work.
It was a joy to be there. I mean, that was you just, you know, the things that you're involved in, Carrie, anything that you're involved in is a joy to be there because you just, I mean, this is, I don't mean this, you know, just to be, the things that you do are just fabulous. And I've always said, I know on the last time we were together over the interview session, You'd ask me about my business and how I got started, and I said, one of the reasons my business has grown so much is that and this is why I give myself credit, you know, and I'm taking credit for this. I've always been able to identify people who are movers and shakers. And when I met you, I realized you were a mover and shaker.
Well, very fine. That was a long time ago.
And when you do that and you stay close to these kinds of people, and you're doing things for those kinds of people, then obviously you're in venues that things are happening all the time,
right,
you know.
Right.
And over the years, I've just been fortunate enough to identify those types of people, you know, and stay close to those types of people. And inevitably, those types of people, if they're not doing anything that day, then the next 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 years, they're going to be the ones that are in control, you know. And you won't say that you were there when they started out,
and,
you know.
And certainly we go way back because you and my brother and sister-in-law were in college together. So the relationship, you talk about relationships, it's interesting that you put it in that perspective. You know, first my relationship with you was knowing about you because of Wilson and Debbie, and now all these years knowing about you because of your photography.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking about, you know, and I think I told you in the past that, you know, primarily now one of the big things about my business is I'm selling photos that I took years and years ago. I just got a call 2 weeks ago from a gentleman that was in school with me at FIS University, in the 60s, and he just got a big award in Atlanta, you know, and he needed photos to show what he was doing at FIS in school.
Wow.
You know, and
I had
photos. I had photos with him in FIS in the 60s. So he called me immediately and said, man, can you send me my photos? I'm ready to get them because I need to have this presentation to show what this thing you're going to be doing for me when they award me in Atlanta. I said, well, yeah, I got the photos. But yeah, you know,
that's
it's not
amazing.
A problem.
That is amazing. You know, talk to us about, you have a new project called Life Documents. Talk to us about that, Sandy Middlebrooks.
Well, what I'm doing now is I'm taking the photos, similar to what I just said about the gentleman I just mentioned, is I'm taking the photos that I've taken of people over many years, and I'm putting them together primarily in albums. I'm currently right now working on about 5 or 6 of them right now, and I'm just finishing up one for a gentleman I just did just yesterday. I have one that I'm just working on, and the woman's going to be coming by later on today. It's just we're going to appoint a judge in the Boston area. I'm doing one for her. I just did one for a city councilman here in Boston. Now, these are photos that I've taken of people over the last 20 years, and when they started out, they weren't judges. They weren't city councilmen. They weren't this, and now they are, you know. And so I've taken photos of them all this period of time, and now they're moving to these different positions, and I have photos of them all along the way, you know. And now they're doing this. I think the last time I talked, we were talking about, I mentioned David Hall as an example, who is now the president of the University of the Virgin Islands, I believe it is.
That's
you know?
Right. And it's so funny that you would talk about relationships. It's wild that you would mention Dr. David Hall, who is president of the university in the Virgin Islands, because one of his faculty members is the mother of my niece's fiance.
Oh, wow. Really?
In the Virgin Islands. Yes, she is from the Philadelphia area, but she's teaching over in the Virgin Islands, and her son is marrying my niece. So that's how close this world is.
That's incredible.
So true. These photos are accumulated over the course of the span that you've been involved in photography. Are you putting them in a bound book, or how are you presenting them to your customers, your clients?
Yes, they're getting them in a bound book. And what I'm doing, Carol, in most cases, in some cases, I have enough photos myself to put together a book. And just for an example, the book that I'm just completing, when I went through the photos I had about 250 photos of this person taken over the last 20 years, let's say.
Oh, wow.
And these cover all kinds of events and their lives and everything else, because when I take pictures of events, oftentimes you'll take pictures of events, somebody's getting an award or something like that at the time. It doesn't seem like a huge thing to them, so they just say, well, no, I don't really need a copy of that. I say, okay, it's all right, you know. And then 2 or 3 years later, they point to this, I take a photo of that, and where they say, well, no, I'm really not that interested. Now, all of a sudden, they have this accumulation of things that have happened, and then they say, gee, you know, how many pictures of all these things? Well, I have all these pictures of all these things, you know. Yeah. And then I take that, and I combine them with the pictures they do have. I take their photographs and combine them to fill in the gaps that I may have, you know, in their little life thing. I call these life journals. And I put all these together, and then we make this completed thing that kind of shows their life over a period of time. I did one for you know Ralph Cooper? You know
Ralph Cooper, who was with the Veterans Benefits Association here in Boston,
you know,
retired
about
a year or so ago. Right.
moved down to Texas, you know. So now he's an example.
Oh, he's in Texas now. Oh.
Yep, yeah, in Texas. I moved one. I just did one for a guy in North Carolina. I did one for a guy in Philadelphia. I'm working on one for a guy in California right now. I have a guy down in Florida I'm doing one for. You know, these are people who have said, hey, yeah, put this together for me, get my thing together and put it together, and that's what I'm doing. You know, so.
Well, you know, it's a great gift to purchase, but not just for yourself. I'm thinking about the people you've mentioned, like Ralph Cooper and others who have lived a very long, illustrious life, but to actually purchase that and then to pass it on to your children and grandchildren. That, to me, I think would be the benefit of it.
Well, see, that to me, that is the whole purpose of the thing.
Right.
The whole purpose of this is not for you. See, some people look at it and say, well, gee, I don't want to do this, because they're thinking in terms of short-term thought again. You know, they're thinking, mm-hmm. well, this may seem vain or something like this. It has absolutely nothing to do with that, you know. Mm-hmm. We're talking about whether or not the history of your family is going to exist for your family for years to come. I mean,
right.
I don't know how many people, if I were to ask you, if you had something like this on your mother, something like this on your father, how valuable mm-hmm. this would be. This
oh, boy.
But that's what we're talking about now. You have to understand, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, will your children have this kind of thing to look back on you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, will your family have this? If you worked hard all your life and you've done what are really significant things in the community, and I mean significant in the sense that you raised a family, that's significant. I mean, I'm not talking about just your head or anything necessarily.
Sure.
Either, right? Then this needs to be shown. This needs to be something that your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren can pull out and say, oh, his grandpa. Now, it's hard to think that way when you're going through the process, you know.
Right.
And this is the whole thing I'm always
And there may be people in the earlier photographs that you don't want to be with now or you don't want to be seen with. So
yeah.
I guess you have to get through all of that.
You have to really have to, and let me just say this, because this is something I'm not going to say, but in particular, I think, that little piece there, I find out as I'm going through this, that's the piece that women have to get through more than men.
Oh, interesting.
Piece,
really?
You know, and I found out, you know, that whole piece of, you know, hey, I, you know, you got to get over this because, see, this is a part of your life, you know.
Yeah.
This is a
yeah.
part of your history. You know, you can't erase it. You can't, you know, say, well, this didn't happen. You know, it happened,
uh-huh.
whatever,
that's
you know.
That's true.
But it represents your life, you know. And for
uh-huh.
your family, it's a part of your life that's very valid. Because in most cases, when we talk about family, wouldn't be around without this part of your life.
Well, that's
you know?
True. That's very true.
So it's something that you have to also pass on, you know, and I think some people would rather totally forget and just move on, you know. But the thing is something that you have to, you know, you really do have to say, okay, this is the part. I have to, this is my history. This is what I have to show. This is what, you know, this is what got me to wherever I am, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not, you know, it's what I would like to have learned if I had to do all over again. Maybe I'd have made a little different turn here, but, you know, this is the part of the life that you led.
Exactly.
Yeah. So to me, it's just so important. You know, I can't get over it because I get all scared because it really is what motivates me to go out and do this day in and day out.
Well, I can hear the passion in your voice, definitely. And I'm thinking about, tell us again, and I would encourage our listeners and those who are downloading the show, you can go back several months ago. We had Sandy Middlebrooks on earlier, and you'll be able to get additional information about him. That was a terrific show as well. Tell us, when did you start taking pictures, and give us that recap of when all this started. See, people are thinking, well, he started when he was maybe 25 years old. Not so. Tell us, Sandy, when you got started taking photos.
Oh, I think I started, I was in junior high school. I think I was in actually the 7th or 8th grade.
Wow.
I got started there, and a teacher got me started. And I always like to say that because I think many of us in the education field, you don't know how important what you do is because of the impact you're having on young people. Oftentimes doesn't show until much, much later in life. And at that time, maybe you're not even around, you know, and all of a sudden it takes hold, something that you had said, something that you did, some type of impression that you made. And this particular mm-hmm. teacher was just interested in photography and encouraged me and everybody else in the class at the time. You know.
That's in Cleveland. We're talking about the Cleveland public school system.
The Cleveland public school system to get involved mm-hmm. in photography. I was all excited about it. We were developing pictures at the time. Obviously, there was some film and everything was big. You know,
right.
A little dark room, and he was showing me how to develop pictures and everything. And I went on to high school, and I don't know how much time we have, I'll just try to tell this quickly, but we went on to high school, and I got involved in photography in high school. But interestingly enough, at the time, the Cleveland public school system decided to take photography out of the school system as a part of the accredited courses. So when I went into the school, I already knew about it, so I got involved with it right away as a freshman in high school. And then the next year, they took it out. So I was the only one left because all the other people taking the class were seniors. I was the only one that really understood how to use this equipment they had at the school, you know. And it was a major school in Cleveland at the time. So they put me in charge of this equipment and said I could take pictures and develop pictures for the school. So I just started taking photos for the yearbook and everything, and the yearbook and the school paper at the high school. And I was the school paper, yearbook paper and everything. And I realized at the time, I said, these pictures are important. I'm going to hold on to every picture I take, you know.
Right.
And I did that. And I did that when I started out in junior high school. And I saved them all. Then I went on to Fisk University, and a very similar thing happened to me there. I got involved with photography there, and they had a dock room there. And again, I already knew how to operate all this equipment. So I was in majors in physics, and my physics professor, who was really big in photography at the time, said, well, I'm going to get you involved in our photography program here and let you deal with this. And then they made him the president of the university, which was timely for me.
That's amazing.
Everything. You know, so he had me taking photos for the school. So I did photos for the yearbook for 4 years there, you know. And again, I realized then, I said, all these are important. I mean, we had people coming into school, Harry Belafonte, Sidney 48, Jerry Butler, I mean, the Temptations, I mean, the, you know, the, all kinds of big groups were coming to the school performing and on campus, and speakers were there. We, Rap Brown was down there. We had Angela. Everybody was there, you know. So I was taking photos of all these people.
And you have these pictures in your archive.
Yeah, I have photos of all these people, right? And then I left there, came to Boston, and got involved with a group here that was teaching photography out of MIT, you know. And I had a really great photographer at MIT who was teaching photography at a Roxbury Photographers Training Program right in Roxbury, which is right in the heart of the black community for those of you who are not from the Boston area. And so we were teaching photography there, and a number of people came out of that program who are now really doing great in photography, and also some of them are now, in fact, involved in producing shows on the West Coast and everything, and TV. And
my goodness.
Right. And I went into the photography thing. And so I just kept sticking with the photography here, started taking photos, and met a number of people here, and was taking photos of things. At the time, I was doing something else and taking photos all along. But I always loved the photography. And I just said, you know, I'm just looking for photography. That's it. I'm just going to do this. This thing is following me everywhere. I'm going to do this.
I mean, you're married, you had a son, you worked a different job, you got a master's degree here in Boston, but you came back and started your business in the early 80s, and you've been doing it ever since.
Now, my son is telling you doing photography. My son is doing photography on the West Coast.
Now he's doing photography.
Yeah, my brother is doing photography in Ohio, you know.
Oh, my God.
So they're both excellent photographers also, you know, so.
I mean, the amazing thing I'm thinking about is you started your business in the early 80s. You literally have pictures of me from that time when I was like 30 pounds lighter and, you know, different circumstances altogether, along with so many other people. But what I find amazing, we're talking about, this is a tough economy. We are still trying to struggle through a recession. I don't think the recession is quite over yet. There are people out there really looking for work. But you have managed to stay with one vocation that was an avocation and now has become a vocation for nearly 30 years, and you're still thriving in business. What's been the real secret in addition to the relationship component that we've talked about earlier?
Well, I would say that for me, and again, I've told people from the very beginning that I'm in this for the long haul. I didn't get involved for a day. Some people, they get excited about what I'm just saying. They'll go out tomorrow and they'll buy a camera and they'll do it for 2 weeks. It doesn't quite work like that, you know. I mean, you know, and it's interesting because after a while, people perceive that. I mean, they perceive that if they see what he's doing, the same thing he was doing last week. He's doing the same thing he was doing the week before that. And they say, well, obviously, if I have him to do it, then I can depend upon him doing it next week. You know, I'm going to do this. You know, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I've committed to do once I understood it. And then once I began to get involved with it from the standpoint of, from a historical perspective, I came here, and after I got here, I was so interested. And I know you know I went to BU also. And I went to BU and got a degree in Afro-American Studies. And the reason I did that was that I was just so concerned about recording our community. Because I felt like so many things were going on in the community, and they were going unrecorded. You know, it's great to have this happening. I've gone to things where they're appointing people, being appointed judges, and they're adopting children. I've had people at adoptions. I've been at adoptions for people. Of course, we talked about the wedding. Yeah, but all these other kinds of events that kind of go by the wayside. People were not impressed. Now the cameras are much more common. A lot more of this is being recorded by the people themselves. But in the past, you have to look back and realize that people weren't even recording it because they didn't know how to take the photos very well. They didn't understand that they might take one photo, but they wouldn't get a nice photo of what was going on. And people were saying,
right.
You know, maybe we need to record this. And I was saying, you definitely need to record this. You need to take some photos of this activity that's going on. And I want to record this for you because I think it's important. I mean, it's not just that I want to be there, but I think this is important, you know. And once
and
people
you haven't moved to include videography. I know that you work with other people and you collaborate, but videography hasn't become a part of your mainstay. Any reason why? Because still photos are still passionate for you these 50 years later?
It's interesting that, too. I always tell people, first of all, my first thing is obviously I'm still trying to get the still photos right. You know what I mean? When I get it right, I'll switch up the video. If I thought I had it right, maybe I'd quit and go to the video, but I don't have it right yet, right? And the truth of the matter is I've always thought this about, it's very interesting about video, right? Video to me is great, and I think video really is fantastic. But the problem with video, I've always thought, is that in order to see an hour video, it takes an hour of your time. You know, most people, like when you videotape somebody's wedding, for example, very few people sit around and watch their wedding video for 5 hours. You know, that's how long the wedding took. You know, and watch people dance and jump around for 5 hours. You may be interested in it, but your friends are not.
Right.
You don't have 5 hours. Now, your wedding album, everyone wants to look at that. How does it take? It takes 10 to 15 minutes. You might stop and talk about a couple of photos. You go through it. This is the power of photography still. It conveys it very clearly. If you have a picture up on your wall, it shows your mother and father, and it shows you, that's all you need to show. You know, you only need to show a movie of them, you know, in the background playing with you. You know, you just need to show, this is my mom, this is my dad. Oh, my gosh, she looks just like you. That's your dad? Yeah, that's my dad. Oh, my gosh. You know, that does it. They always say this thing about a picture is 1,000 words. It really is.
Right.
You know,
right.
And they have not improved upon that basic concept. They haven't come up with the thing yet that's better. That's to say that what gets me now, though, I think what's happening, and I'll just say this, is that with this whole proliferation of digital cameras, I don't know if it's good or bad, because the problem is that everybody now is storing stuff on these computers. So they're not printing photographs anymore. So you really don't have your photographs like you used to. You could go in a drawer and pull out all the photographs that you have. They may not be organized, but they were there, you know?
Right.
Now,
right.
They're on your computer. They're on your hard drive. Your computer dies, your history dies. You know what I mean? You know? You know, you don't, and how do you pass that along to somebody? Who's going to go through your hard drive after you've gone and pull all these memories out and put them together, you know? Whereas people, families have thought over pictures. You know what I mean? They split up because she wanted me to have that picture. You know, that kind of thing. You know, that's
sure.
Because it was that important.
So what
you're
saying,
you know?
Sandy, is that you're encouraging people to take those pictures that you have in your camera and on your hard drive, and so many people haven't backed up their computers, and get them printed out so at least you have them somewhere to pick up 10, 15 years later if, in fact, that computer that you're using, we talked about equipment earlier, is obsolete and you can't open it anymore. So printing the pictures is important.
It really is. I mean, I have several computers over the years, obviously, and some of them I have one computer now set up upstairs with a hard drive, and I can't get rid of the computer because none of the other computers will read this drive, you know?
Oh,
you know, so they keep changing out the operating systems and everything, so you find out you don't have this patch, you got Windows 7, and you go back to XP Plus or whatever you have when you put this stuff on there, this thing won't read it, you know?
Right.
So you look around, you have something that's literally unusable. You thought it was going to be useful because you put it on this very truly disk or something that no longer is being used, or some floppy disk that's no longer being used. You know what I mean? You know, now you see they're phasing out the regular DVDs. They're going to Blu-ray DVDs and that type of thing. So things are continually being phased out, right? But they have to phase out pictures, you know? They can't phase out pictures. They can't phase out high. If you got a picture, again, going back to what my example, you got a picture of your grandparents, the picture's still good. It's a 10 type, it's still good, you know. But you might have it on a disc, maybe unreadable when you finally pull it out, you know. You might find it in there, you know.
And we're talking, while I'm talking to you, Sandy Middlebrooks, I'm talking to people in the chat room, too, and Dr. Waters said, those who have all those pictures on their computer, you may want to think about a backup system like Carbonite.com. That's Carbonite.com. I think it's less than $60 a year, and it'll back up an unlimited amount of file storage from your computer, including your pictures. And for me, I've got like 250,000 pictures on my computer, and they're all backed up by Carbonite. So that's a plug. I need to have them to do a paid advertisement on with my magazine, Carbonite.com. That's a place where you want to go. That's true. Well, in the closing minutes, I've just enjoyed this segment so much, and we have just a few more minutes left. Can you give us some close? You've talked about relationships. You've certainly talked about the Legacy Journal, and we would encourage those who want to get more information and use his services to call Sandy at 617-265-8182 or go to his website at middlebrooksphotography.com. I mean, this gentleman has 50 years experience as a photographer, starting, you know, way back in the 60s and going all the way up until now, with just years and years of accumulated information, actually going back to the 50s probably, and then up until now, just with the experiences that started off as a young boy, seventh grade, encouraged by a teacher in Cleveland. So let's start off, first of all, with the young people. What would you encourage that young 13, 14-year-old, 12-year-old who is somewhat interested in photography? How would you advise them?
Well, it's interesting you said that. I'm doing some mentoring now at an elementary school in Boston where we have a class of fourth or fifth graders, young men, actually, that we're trying to mentor and talk to about different things. And one of the things I'm trying to do is to get them to get out and start taking photos just as I did. Same little thing scenario. And to make them understand the importance of this that will be over the years. Because, again, I can say what I was doing, and I thought that everybody else thought this way, and then coming around, not everybody thinks this way at an early age. Because when you're young, obviously, it's not what you're thinking about. You're not thinking about 10 years from now. You think about today, you know.
Right.
So if everything goes right for you, if life doesn't treat you unfairly, you'll probably be around 10 years from now, you know. So you need to think about, well, let me do some things now. It's like putting money in the bank. Let me put the money in the bank now. That 10 years from now will be worth something, you know. Again, people are spending all their money and they're not really thinking about saving. So it's the same type of basic concept. And I'm trying to get them to understand that from a photography standpoint, at least, it's something that if you choose to, and again, you might take it a different direction. You might not want to be a photographer. Not everybody does, you know.
Right.
You might want to stick with it for some time, and you might find that you might want to take it in a whole different direction that I can even conceive of now, because I don't know what photography is going in the next 15, 20 years. They're going to be doing holographic photography by then, you know. So I think that that's something that a young person at the same age I was years ago could start looking at now and could start preparing and working at. So if it's something that you enjoy doing, if you like taking pictures of people, I would encourage you to do that. You know, have your little camera. It doesn't have to be an expensive camera. It doesn't have to be the greatest camera. Just something that you can go out and you can use. You can use it at school. You can take it of your family and that type of thing. And just continue. Just start that process. And the main thing it'll get you around people. And when you're around people, that's not a bad thing. You know, as long as you're around people, you'll get to know about it.
Yeah. And for someone who's been around a bit, maybe they have a pretty busy life, but they, you know, the drawer is stacking up with photos as they go about their lives and build their families. What advice would you give for that person who's a more seasoned person in terms of taking photographs and taking photography to the next level?
Well, first thing I would say, I really say that person who has the photographs, the main thing I would say is that you should put your dates on the back of all your photographs. I just want to mention that. You know, if you take photographs a lot, and digital photography, if you're saving files, the one thing that's great about digital photography, all this information is stored within the file. So that therefore, a lot of this is kept with the file. As long as you have the file, the date took it, and all the kind of things, the tag, you can know the exact time it was taken. Most photographs that are printed up, you have no idea when they happen. You know, to me, the primary important thing, you may not know where it happened. I it would be great if you put all the information on there, but I'm not even saying that. I'm saying at the very least, put the date that this happened. You know, you want to know that Johnny was 10 years old when this happened, right? And this is just, it doesn't take a lot of effort, but just every time you take a photograph, if you print it, take the time to put the date on the back of it when it's happening. If you want to put a little bit more information, the more the better. And again, it may not seem like a big thing because when it happens, you know it happened. You say, well, why should I do that? Well, this is Bob's birthday, and I know it happened last week. Well, that's the day, you know. I mean, 5 years from now, you won't have a clue, you know. So you need to put that on there so someone else who picks it up and say, well, how old were you when this happened? Well, I was 25, you know, because you can figure it out, you know what I mean, because there's a date, you know. So I would say that was one thing I would say. And the other thing is to begin to organize your photos, if you're going to do them digitally and hold them on a computer, organize them. As you had said earlier, I think, storing them in some type of thing like this program that you talked about or something like that where you can store them is a great way to
go. Right, at carbonite.com.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we're moving towards the end.
Those are great shots. We're definitely going to have to bring you back on the air, but it's been a great show again. Again, put the dates on the back of your pictures, organize your pictures, work and encourage young people to get involved in photography. And I just learn so much from you every time I talk with you and every time that I bring you on the air. Sandy Middlebrooks, you are a terrific friend, a fabulous photographer, and I wish you the very best as life continues to unroll and unveil new opportunities for you. Sandy Middlebrooks, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Thank you, Akira.
And for everyone, we just say we hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with an exciting show. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we'll talk with you next week. See you soon.